This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Good Thursday to all of you. This is Patricia W. Fisher here with Readers Entertainment Radio. It is National Cookbook Month along with Adopt a Shelter Dog Month. So find a really good book, make a good recipe, and snuggle up with your pooch because the weather is changing. It's also Taco Day and Vodka Day. No idea how those two came together. Seems like tequila would be a better choice with the tacos. But if you sit down with a good glass of vodka today with a great taco, I have a book for you to read. It is by a fabulous author named Miss Julia London, who's with us today. Julia is the New York Times and USA best-selling author of more than 30 romantic fiction novels. She's the author of the popular historic series, including The Cabot Sisters, Secrets of Hadley Green, and The Highland Grooms, with Tempting the Lord being her most recent release from the Highland Grooms series. Her contemporary romances include Lear Sisters Trilogy, Lake Haven series, and the Pine River series. She's a recipient of the RT Book Club Award for Best Historical Romance and a six-time finalist for the prestigious Rita Award for Excellence in Romantic Fiction. Her latest book, Suddenly Single, is the fourth edition to the Lake Haven series. And you can find Julia at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and her website. All of those links are in the write-up for the show. So welcome to the show, Miss Julia London. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So I had the most fun reading your website, and anybody listening should go to Julia's website. It's julialondon.com because she has this great part where it says a bio, and then it says her real bio. And so the top bio is all like very, you know, professional, and then underneath talks about all these cool things you did in your life. But tell me a little bit about the library. You have this really great segment about the library. What was that to you growing up in West Texas?
Oh, my gosh. So I am a child of ranchers who lived way out in the country and with only siblings to play with, which, as you know, can only go so far.
That's true.
You've got it. Yeah. But one of the big things for us every week was we got to go to the library and pick out our books for the week. And it was
right
in this little house, smelled like, you know, damp, like somebody's grandmother had died in there. But it was full of books, and they had put all the kid books on the lower shelves, and we could just sit in the aisles for what seems to me like now for hours, you know,
sure,
going through all the books and picking out the ones we were going to take home, and we each got to take home a stack of books every week and read them and then returned them. It was really important to me. It was like my one social outing.
Right. Were you limited in regard to subject matter regarding your parents? Did they say you can only have this shelf of books, or were you given free rein?
Oh, we were given free rein. I was just limited by height at that point.
Okay.
But, yeah. No, I don't remember. My mother was a big reader, and I don't remember her ever, you know, like censoring anything we wanted to read. Just like,
yeah.
Take it.
Do it. Read. And so you read all the Nancy Drews and Little House on the Prairies. And I mean,
yeah,
it just kept going from there.
Yeah.
So were you kind of feeling like,
her.
Well, and it's fun because, you know, I'm sitting here thinking of this and, you know, I know it's kind of tropey, but thinking of Belle when she goes to the bookstore, you know, and what's new, you know, what new books are here. I mean, I guess you could relate to that a little bit, you know, as she goes in and looking for a new adventure each time.
Yes. I mean, I couldn't wait to get my books. I just loved them. I just loved those trips. And then when I was in middle school, I discovered Mary Stuart and the Crystal Cave, which was about Merlin. And so that took me in a whole new direction of sort of like fantasy. And I hadn't read, you know, I'd been pretty much reading Nancy Drew and Little House up till then. Yeah.
So a whole new adventure.
A whole new adventure.
Right.
That's true. Yes.
So when you went to college, what was your major? Because you got to college, and then you ended up in politics for a while. But what was that journey? How did you get from here to there?
Well, it wasn't in politics. I was in public administration, and I worked for politicians, but I wasn't a politician.
Okay.
But, you know, I went to school, and I studied government and public administration. My first job out of college was with the U.S. Department of Commerce. And
okay.
honestly, I can't remember. I think a professor pointed me, you know, I just needed a job at that point. And he pointed me in that direction. And I started working at their offices in Dallas. And then I transferred up to Washington. And while I was in Washington, I worked for the Department of Commerce and the Census Bureau for a few years. And then I got a job at the White House, believe it or not, with the Drug Czar's office. Yeah, and so I became a senior policy person there at the White House for several years. And I had not, you know, I mean, writing was not on my radar at all. But I was still a big, avid reader. You know, I was still like, my favorite thing to do is buy, you know, get some books. And that's what my downtime was. But so then when Clinton was elected, he cleared out the White House with all civil servants, which I was one.
Right.
I wasn't a political appointee. I was a civil servant. And so,
and that's pretty typical, right, for when a new administration comes in, they kind of start over a lot of times?
Yeah, they do. I mean, a lot of them in the White House jobs, you know, are political appointees that the administration appoints because, you know, they're not going to be there past the administration. But, you know, there's always like a core group of civil servants that are there through various administrations. But
sure.
Clinton was, I think, the first one to do that. He just like, you know, yeah. I
started
remember
over.
Mac McClarty was his chief of staff, and he came over and said, your service to your country is greatly appreciated, but your service is no longer needed. And we were all looking at each other like, who's he talking to? He was talking to us, but he remained civil servants. But I came back
right.
to Texas as a result of that and to a public administration job in Austin. I was a
okay.
county manager for justice and public safety. And I absolutely hated that job. You know, there was something to be said about working at the White House because you're kind of in an ivory tower and you don't actually have real contact with constituents.
Right.
But at the
right.
local level, you have a lot of contact with constituents. And I'm like, you know, I'm not that kind of person. I'm not diverse, I guess. And so
mm-hmm.
I started thinking, I was still pretty young, and what am I going to do? And I had just picked up, at a garage sale, no less, an Iris Johansson book. And before she was writing Suspense, long, long ago when she was writing historical romance. And I can't
uh-huh.
for the life of me think of that book, but it was set in ancient Egypt. And it just astounded me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I love this. And so I started reading all the historical romance I could find. And then I thought, I wonder if I could do this, you know.
Sure.
Sitting around your bed one
sure.
night.
Sure.
I wonder if I could do this. And
right.
I tried it.
And there
and
you
I
are.
Yeah.
And your first book was published when?
In 1998. This is my 20-year anniversary of being a published working writer.
Wow. Wow.
You know, it's pretty remarkable these days. A lot of people, I mean, just because of the industry changes, it's hard to stay in the game this long.
Sure. And so you've more of your book catalog is historicals. Is that more of because of where you started reading historical romances? Do you just kind of feel like that's where your heart is? Or, what do you think? I mean, you going to stay with historicals more so than contemporary, or what's your thought?
Well, it's two things, really. I mean, I do love historical romance. I am a certain in a previous life, I was to the manor born. I was not a servant. You know, I was wearing
right,
a nightgown. And I mean, I've always loved history, and I've always, you know, even as a little girl, I was reenacting historical scenes from, you know, England or cowboys, whatever. But, you know, I started, my first book was a historical romance, and I did really well with those first few books. And it's kind of like a, you know, once you start to build, then you get more support from the publishers, and then they were pushing me out there. And I just became much better known in historical romance. And then a few
sure.
years into it, I wanted to try writing contemporary romance and women's fiction. And I've been lucky enough to be, you know, I've had several opportunities to do that, but I've never really matched the success that I've had in historical romance.
Sure. So, and now, so tell us a little bit about the most recent release you have with your, it's Tempting the Laird. from your Highland Groom series. And this is the fifth book in the series. So tell us a little bit about that.
So this was that series I did. I had written so many historical set in the Regency period of England, and I was getting a little stale with it. I mean, personally, you know, just as a writer, I just wanted to like spread my wings because, you know, that Regency period is only about 20 years.
And, and there's a lot going
on.
People
who don't know what, there was a lot going on, but you know, and for people who don't know that period, it's like when Jane Austen said all her books, and it refers to when the Mad King George was so mad that they made his son the regent, and that lasted about 20 years. So just to give a frame of reference, but I wanted to try something new. And in the 18th century, Scotland and England were formally unified, but they never really got along. They were like, you know, it was like a bad marriage. And I thought, what a great backdrop to a series of, you know, Scottish family marrying into English wealth and privilege. And so that's how I started it. And I followed the Mackenzie family from early 18th century up until about, I think that one's like 1760, somewhere around there. But, you know, and so it's, every one of those books is set against a different period of the Scottish and English union. And every one of them had their own problems, and so did the couples that I wrote about. So Tempting the Ware is about one of the children of the Mackenzies. And she, it's about Catriona Mackenzie, the youngest daughter. And she came of age, of marrying age, right around the time of the Scottish Rebellion, the Jacobite Rebellion. And what happened after that rebellion, not everybody was involved, but the English came through and they were just clearing out, you know, anybody that was even suspected of being a Jacobite. And a lot of men died. A lot of men fled. So I, you know, made it like she had no prospects for marriage and she was stuck. You know, she didn't have anybody. And so many of the families and young men she'd known were gone. So in the 18th century, if you're not getting married, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to live off your dad's wealth.
Right.
Or not. Or, you know, you just, women just did not have any options. They had nothing to fall back on except like their bodies and their attractiveness and their, you know, if they had any money. But that's it. I mean, they, you know, they weren't allowed really to go out and forge an occupation. So that's the story of Catriona. She's her aunt has died, and her aunt had started a home for women who were displaced by the rebellion. They lost their husbands, their brothers, their fathers, and they, you know, had no way of making a living. And so she renovated this old abbey, and they were living there. But all the men wanted it gone. You know, they wanted to do something with that abbey, and they just didn't like the idea of, you know, a place where women could go in their own backyard. Sounds familiar, right? I mean, maybe not familiar, but I mean, it's believable for sure the way things have been going lately. So that's what she's doing. But then the crown comes along and says, you know, honestly, we're gonna take this because this abbey was used during the rebellion. And so by law, it's forfeit to the crown. And so now they've taken those blocks up from under her and she has nothing. Well, she does have a rich English uncle who bought one of the houses that was abandoned in Scotland, and she goes to see him. And while she's there, she sees this Duke, of course. It's got to be a Duke. I mean, you don't want to mess around with like barons and.
let's go for it.
But, you know, he's wandering around. Nobody talks to him. And they say, oh, you don't know. You know, they suspect that he killed his wife. And she's like, why aren't you people on top of this? Is this all you know? Nobody knows that he killed his wife. And they're all too scared of him. So she's got nothing to lose. And she's like, I'm going to find out if he killed his wife or not. I mean, you know, that's too juicy just to leave hanging there.
Sure.
Pick that fruit. So that's what the book is about, you know. She hears this guy, you know, this Duke has killed his wife and everybody's letting him walk around and he's friendless and of course he's broody and moody and dark and handsome. So she inserts herself into his life to see if he did. And I'll leave it at that. You're going to read the book to find out if he did.
Yeah.
Although you can probably
absolutely will read the book.
This is a romance novel.
Well, we'll see. You know, I mean, there's always a fun twist. I mean, you always have good stuff in there. So if you're just now tuning in to Readers Entertainment Radio, we're talking to Julia London, and she was just telling us about her latest book from the Highland Groom series, Tempting the Laird. But that's not the only book you have out right now. You have Suddenly Single, which is a contemporary romance, and this is the fourth book in the Lake Haven series. So tell me about how you came about writing Lake Haven and then you're Suddenly Single.
Yeah, Lake Haven was a series I did for the Montlake imprint of Amazon. And it was, you know, it started off slow, but it gained in popularity over time. And while it was gaining in popularity, I left Montlake and went to another publisher. And, you know, so mm-hmm. that series ended. But I kept getting this mail. People just love that town and they love the characters. So I, on my own, wrote another entry and published it myself. And it's been very well received. I've just been kind of shocked by it. But people were so excited to go back to Lake Haven. And I don't know, you know, I made it, I set it in on the East Coast. I never really say what state it's in, but it's, I wanted to make it sort of like a Hamptons, but not actually the Hamptons. So it's within striking distance of New York City. And you can say it's Connecticut, New York, or whatever, but on a very picturesque
sure.
lake. And all the rich, that's where they hang out. You know, so there's big mansions there. But then there's all the people that cater to the rich that aren't rich. So it's
right.
kind of like the whole town is about class differences. And, yeah, so, yeah, that just came out last month.
And, you know, you're talking about getting feedback from readers. Is it always, you know, it's fun to have readers write to you and say, well, what about this character? And you're like, oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
They're just
That's
that
true.
Invested.
They're that invested. And I have readers write me about characters that are so secondary that I'm like, who is that? Who are they talking about? I have to go back and, you know, like read the back of my book and remind myself. I mean, some of them, yeah, they'll just pick up on secondary characters that they really want to see a story about. And unfortunately, I just, you know, wish I could write, you know, spinoffs on every series that I ever write, but time is a factor. So I was glad I
Great.
Was able to do this one. Yeah.
Well, it looks beautiful, and the cover's great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm
tell
really
me, now that
it.
You've written historical and you've written contemporary, what is something you haven't written yet that you want to?
Something I haven't published
yes.
that I'm working on. I'll say it that way because I think I've okay. written everything I've wanted to write. But I've been working on a witch book for a few years.
Okay.
You know, with witches and warlocks. And I don't know. People don't know me for that. And sometimes it's really hard to jump genres.
Yes.
But I'm going to try it. I mean, I've just had so much fun writing it. And the premise of it is that there's an old Alfred Tennyson poem about Merlin the Magician, going back to the Crystal Cave, and that mm-hmm. he was tricked and duped by the wily Vivian, and he was sealed forever in a hawthorn tree. But in my series, she did it, and she stole his magic, and he's out of the hawthorn tree, and it's resulted in centuries of warfare between warlocks and witches for that
mm-hmm.
core bit of magic. And so, you know, it's these men and women who have to come together once a year, men and women, witches and warlocks, that have to come together once a year to mate. But other than, you know, during Beltane, but other than that, they're mortal enemies
mm-hmm.
vying for power. So it's about that. And I'm excited about it. I don't know if anybody will ever see it because I don't know if it, you know, if anybody will want to publish it, but I have had the best time writing it. It's just a complete fantasy world. I have no rules because I don't know what the rules are for witches and warlocks.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure there's going to be a happy ending. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen with it. But they're all over the place. I mean, it's really been a trip. Now, see, I'm like,
well,
kind of
like yeah, I mean,
know.
That sounds
like
something completely different.
Like, what is she talking about? Like, it's like,
well, it is around
like
Halloween.
Describe, you know?
Oh, wow. So hold on. My dog is freaking out. There's a squirrel. There she goes.
Yeah.
All right. She's outside. Okay. Now I feel safer. So there's a wily squirrel outside. She's one of our, and, you know, I mentioned adopt a shelter dog, that she was one of our little dogs that we adopted. And it's funny because when we first saw her, she was cowering in the back of the kennel. She'd been there like 3 months. And she just was very scared. And she's a mixture of a miniature pincher and a wiener dog. So she looks like a wiener dog on stilts. And but as soon as my husband and my son walked up, she was like, looked at him like, okay, it's time to go. Time to go home. So she's our wonderful little squirrel catcher. She has ears like Dobby the elf, and so she's a lot of fun. So when you're talking about witches and wizards and warlocks, it's fun because I'm like, oh, and then I have the dog that has the Dobby ears. So it all works out. I think it's a sign. I think you should continue forward with this series and see if you can get someone to publish it, because I think it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, that's what I'd really like to do and see what happens with it.
Well, tell me, now what's on your bookshelf for your to-be-read pile?
Oh, I have so much. Let me just walk over here and take a look. I have.
It's never ending, right?
It's never ending. I have, actually, speaking of magic, I have Alice Hoffman, The Rules of Magic, which is a prequel to Practical Magic that came out last year.
Okay.
I'm reading right now Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens, which is a very current book. I think it has not been out very long.
Okay.
I have the next book in the Crazy Rich Asians series.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the movie?
I did. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was, I had read the book when it came out, and it was really close to the book, and I have the next one, Rich People Problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's on my, I would like to read it. All the Light We Lost by Jill Santopolo. I have French Exit by Patrick DeWitt.
Okay.
It's kind of a funny one. I have Lake Success by Gary Steingart. I read his super sad true love story when it came out a few years ago, and it's really funny.
Do you gravitate, when you're not reading romance, do you gravitate towards fiction or nonfiction, or do you just kind of walk through the bookstore or wherever and say, that looks good, and pick it up?
Yeah, I mean, I do that. I'm really bad about doing it online. You know, it'll pop up in a sidebar, and I'm like, oh, and ordering it. But I belong to a book club in Austin, and they read a lot of nonfiction, so I read nonfiction along with them. And then I guess I gravitate personally, if I'm picking out a book, it's probably going to be fiction. And generally,
right,
women's fiction or mainstream fiction. I used to read a ton of romance, and I don't read as much of it now, probably because I write it all day long, you know, but I still
right.
like it.
Yeah. And I think there was there's always the discussion of, do you read what you're writing? Because I've talked to a lot of different writers, and it's like, aren't you worried that you're going to lift or even unintentionally lift an idea from someone else? And that's not my concern, because usually what I'm reading is something completely different romance-wise than what I'm writing. But, yeah, I can understand why people would want to separate the two.
Oh, that never enters my mind. I don't worry about that. I mean, I think it's just that I'm sort of saturated with it, you know, so
yeah.
I just want to read something a little different.
Yeah, I've with my kids, we're all reading Harry Potter series again, so I'm like on four different books because they're all in different ages, and so it's fun how to go back and see how she structured certain sentences and how she set up things, and so it's fun to go back and read books with someone else and read it slower because you're reading every word. And it sets a little bit of a different a bar to it, and I think it helps with creative outlet, like you're saying. You know, read something completely different, open a different part of your brain up a little. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could read four books in a series at the same time, though. That would be difficult.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm, you know, each kid's a different age, so we sit there and they read some and I read some, so it's kind of a back and forth. But so tell me what would you like to see? You know, there's been a lot of discussion recently about changes and such in the romance industry. What would you like to see more of in the romance genre that you don't feel like is there or isn't as well represented as it could be?
Well, it's boy, that's a tough question. You know, I feel like, especially in mass market, we've sort of winnowed it down to a couple of subgenres, like Regency historical or, you know, modern cowboys, which I have, you know, I will confess, I'm writing a series for Berkeley, you know, cowboys.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's just doesn't seem like there's a lot of growth. I mean, a lot of room for growth into new genres. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because the mass market is shrinking, you know, and the places you can put mass market books is shrinking, and big box retailers know what their customers want, or is it that we haven't tried a bunch of these different subgenres? I would just like to see a variety, big variety of romances set in different places in the world with different people, different periods.
Yeah.
It starts to feel a little cookie cutter.
You know, it's interesting. When I was at RWA in Denver, I was talking to this lovely woman from Kensington, and she said she is dying for books set between the Civil War and World War II, and not including World War II, but that whole, like, 1900, you know, 1890s to 1935 type region area. And she said it's this huge period of growth that people just kind of gloss over because everyone just kind of jumps from the Civil War to World War II. And, and there's just a ton of stuff going on. And so it was very interesting what she was hoping to get. And I think that editors want these things, but I also think that they know what sells. And so until that really great manuscript comes across their desk, they know they could sell in a time period that's not as seen as often. I think that's what you're, you know, what you and I are seeing is a lot of not as much variety as we'd like to see.
Yeah, and have a place to sell it. You know, when I first started 20 years ago, we still had, what was the name of it? They were on every corner of the bookstores.
No.
Borders, yeah. There were Borders.
Borders, B. Dalton.
B. Dalton, And, you know, that's really shrunk, and so I get it. They don't have as many places to go with it, but and you can do that online, but there's so much noise online. I mean, there are so many books published by individuals, and, you know, and then we've heard about some of the gaming that goes on with e-books, not by writers, but by, you know, people trying to make a buck. And so, I mean, there's a lot of noise to get through in both places. So I understand why it's like that, but it would be great if we could walk into a shiny bookstore and all of the genres, everything you would ever want is up there on the shelf, and you could pick as many different kinds of romances as you could.
Just like you did when you were a kid and you walked in the library and it was like a candy store all over again, right?
Yeah, yeah, it really was.
Well,
it really was.
Our time is almost over, but I wanted to touch base with you, tell you thank you so much for coming and talking to us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, Julia London's latest book, Suddenly Single, is contemporary romance, and it's out. It's the fourth book of the Lake Haven series. Her book, Tempting the Laird, is the fifth book in the Highland Groom series. And if you want to find Julia, go on to julialondon.com, and she's got all her books listed, including really cool book lists you can print and take with you to the store or have them printed and ready to go when you're flipping through Amazon. And she's also there on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Patricia. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And you, everybody, keep reading.
Yeah.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.